1320 AM and W248DE broadcasting at 97.5 FM.
Your hometown news talk and sports station is locally grown radio, 97.5 FM and WFHR 1320 AM.
This is the CBS World News Roundup Late Edition, presented by Indeed.com.
I'm Monica Ricks in New York. Congressional leaders are aiming to get a debt deal done by the end of the week after their meeting today with President Biden. CBS's Nicole D'Antonio is in Washington.
It is possible to get a deal by the end of the week. It's not that difficult to get to an agreement.
The leaders are honing in on possible areas of agreement, including rescinding unspent COVID relief money and areas where there's a wider gap, like beefing up work requirements for government aid recipients and student debt relief.
It was a good and productive meeting. Everyone agreed that default would be the worst outcome.
And Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen agrees.
A default could cause widespread suffering as Americans lose the income they need to get by.
She says default could lead to a recession. Texas Congresswoman Jasmine Crockett slammed House Republicans today about their efforts to combat crime while allowing George Santos to keep his seat.
But have they exhibited any courage to say, you know what, we will disallow this in our body. We will make sure that we expel this individual. They have not.
Santos was indicted on 13 federal crimes last week. Democrats have moved to force a vote on his expulsion. Rudy Giuliani is denying sexual assault claims by a former employee. Here's CBS's Matt Piper.
It's a $10 million lawsuit filed by his former employee, Noel Dunphy, who was hired in 2019. Dunphy alleges that Giuliani would often take performance-enhancing drugs and expose himself. Dunphy says she has photos, texts, and recordings.
Police in New Mexico still don't have a motive for yesterday's shooting in Farmington, but say the 18-year-old gunman had a history of mental health issues. Deputy Police Chief Kyle Dowdy.
We have come across some indication that potentially he had some mental health issues, and that's through interviews with involved parties in his life. It's about as far as I can go on that, but there have, in subsequent interviews, there have been some concern about his mental health.
He killed three people while randomly shooting at homes and cars. The creators of ChatGPT want Congress to crack down on AI. CEO Sam Altman.
I think if this technology goes wrong, it can go quite wrong, and we want to be vocal about that. We want to work with the government to prevent that from happening.
Well, in case you missed it, the Philadelphia 76ers have fired coach Doc Rivers. The move comes days after Philly lost to the Boston Celtics in its third straight exit in the second round of the playoffs.
Are you planning to be the coach of the team next year?
Yeah. Yeah, I think I got 2 years left.
At the time, he also said no one is safe in the NBA. Today, the team thanked Doc, but said the change was necessary to play for a championship. This is CBS News.
Need to hire quality candidates fast? You need Indeed. Their powerful hiring platform helps you attract, interview, and hire candidates all in one place. Visit Indeed.com/credit.
One Mississippi, two Mississippi.
Keep counting at those stop signs, Alex. Full stop and doesn't go until she counts to five, McSweeney. Because you are a safe driver. And like most drivers who sign up for Snapshot from Progressive, which customizes your rate for how and how much you drive, you could earn a discount for your good driving. So don't turn into an Alex rolling stop and goes whenever she wants, McSweeney. Because once an Alex full stop and doesn't go until she counts to five, McSweeney. Always an Alex full stop. Well, you know the rest. Sign up for Snapshot today.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Snapshot not available in all states or for all agents.
Did you know you can get someone to shop for you? Stitch Fix really gets me and what I need. Even better, they save me a trip to the mall. It's easy. I share my style, size, and budget, and they do the shopping for me. Stitch Fix sends me things that fit and make me feel like a more stylish version of myself. I keep what works and send back the rest. No subscription required, no commitment, just my style. Stitch Fix. Get started today at stitchfix.com/radio.
This message is for Karina, our mom who finished her high school diploma at age 28. Hi, Mom. It's Amethyst and Nicholas.
Congratulations on getting your diploma.
You worked so hard and have taught us so much.
We love you.
When you graduate, they graduate. Finish your high school diploma for you and for them. Visit finishyourdiploma.org to find free and supportive adult education centers near you. Brought to you by the Dollar General Literacy Foundation and the Ad Council.
This is Mike Moen from Wisconsin News Connection. You may have heard my stories on civic media. Wisconsin News Connection is surveying listeners to learn how to better report on issues important to you. go to WISNewsSurvey.com, fill it out, and you'll be entered to win a $50 Target gift card. Once again, WISNewsSurvey.com to help improve the news and enter to win a $50 Target gift card. Thanks, and we look forward to your response at WISNewsSurvey.com.
Here's your forecast from locally grown radio, WFHR. Lows level off around 38 tonight under mainly clear skies, easterly winds 5 to 10 miles per hour. Sunshine mixed with clouds at times tomorrow, highs around 66, lows around 43, tomorrow night partly cloudy. Chance for scattered storms Thursday, chance for scattered rain showers on Friday. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki. Currently, it's 77.
From Wisconsin Rapids to Stevens Point, your news, talk, and sports is 97.5 FM, locally grown radio. Sponsorship tab. One of our local sales pros will get right back to you. CivicMedia.us and sponsorship. You are listening to your local Civic Media radio station on air. Thank you. Did you know we are always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app too? And if you miss a show or game, find it wherever you get your podcasts or on our website, CivicMedia.us.
This is Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk on Devil Radio 92.7. Now, here are your hosts, Dr. Tim Slecker and Dr. Johnny Lupinacci. Educated educators talking education.
Oh, it is Tim and Johnny Tuesday night, Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk. The number, if you want to jump right in, 844-967-2789, 844-967-2789. I know everybody is waiting. In an hour, the president's going to be talking. We know everybody's tuning in, though, right now for the warm-up. Not because Johnny and I and our special guests are going to talk anything about the State of the Union, except that on Busted Pencils every Tuesday night, the State of the Union is typically something we're dealing with here when we're talking about public education, democracy, teachers, all those things, your neighborhood, the Friday night football, the prom. I'm telling you what, man, State of the Union, it is the State of the Union every Tuesday night, Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk, and we are here. Johnny, we've been having some great conversations. Want to say again, thanks to our guest last week, David Donaldson from the National Center for Grow Your Own, talking about teacher apprenticeships, pathways into teaching other ways. And again, hats off and cheers out to Jess Piper, Jess from Missouri. Last 2 weeks before that, the Dirt Road Democrat. Johnny, going back to that theme too, what I liked when we had Jess Piper on was, we were started talking about the issue of rural schools. There were lots of things we were conversing about with Jess, largely on your prognostication about getting educators, enlisted in the fight for democracy and, in fact, running for public office. But Jess also really talking about rural schools. I put a couple of tweets out regarding rural schools. Found this person out there who had a rural schools connection. And, I kind of Twitter stalked him. He didn't report me to Elon. And I haven't been, put off of the Twitter yet for doing my little bit of Twitter stalking. But thinking about this rural education, Johnny, it's like, wait a minute. Okay. And then grow your own teachers, rural education. We don't talk a lot specifically about the challenges rural America, rural education, rural public education. We tiptoe around it. And so I thought, let's bring this in this week. Former Deputy Assistant Secretary to the U.S. Department of Education for Rural Outreach, John White. Welcome to Busted Pencils. How are you doing, John?
Doing well. Thanks for having me. Thanks for Twitter stalking me.
Hey, you know what? I mean, I really more though thank you for not reporting me to Elon, because I know he's been out there targeting me and targeting the Busted Pencils. But so John White, let's start with, now this was during the Obama administration is when you held this. You've since done other things since then, but we're just going to talk about this. What does it mean to have been the Deputy Assistant Secretary for Rural Outreach at the Department of Education for the United States? What does that job title say that we are expecting you to do or that you're supposed to do, John White?
So, number one, let me say it was an adventure. For about 4.5 years, I was a conduit to the department. I was sharing information, receiving feedback and input from rural educators, school leaders, colleges, nonprofits that support schools all over the country. I had the absolute privilege of traveling to 42 states in about 4.5 years and meeting a lot of great school leaders and teachers and students, educators from all over the country, and bringing their comments, bringing their thoughts, their ideas, their input back to the department so that it could inform policy and programs. Because when we're developing federal policy and programs, if it's a one-size-fits-all model, it's not going to work everywhere. And it certainly isn't going to be flexible enough to serve the needs of small rural schools who, if you're talking about a grant program, may not have a grant writer. If you're talking about a federal policy, they might not have a federal legislation, government relations person who follows this stuff every day. It's on the head of the principal or the superintendent, and they need support. And so how can we make policies flexible and programs flexible enough to meet different needs in different parts of the country? And so those are the types of things we try to do by seeking input and by providing information to get feedback on.
So the communications part, the way you were just describing that too, and the thing about rural, I was just out working with some superintendents here, rural southeastern Ohio, where I'm at. John, you're in Maryland. Johnny Lupinacci's in Washington. Evan, our producer's in Madison. We're coast to coast tonight. But just thinking the way you talked about, you know, the roles, and when I was meeting with very southeastern Ohio rural districts yesterday, meeting with the superintendents, talking about the possibility that these people last Friday, because of shortages, not just in teachers, just across the district, some of them actually driving buses so that schools could go on that day. That's a rural education issue that we think about there. And then, Johnny, you get in here after this. But, John, even rural education, right, that's a huge term when we're talking about what you know, Southeast Ohio, I'm talking here, you know, Appalachia. What are some of – you said you were in 42 states. Talk about the differences in the diversity within rural education.
Oh, absolutely. And the first thing that I want to point out is that poverty increases with distance. So distance from resources, distance from urban centers and suburban areas. The further you go away from employment centers, the more the poverty increases. And when you're headed into places like states with vast distances or the Appalachian Mountains, you're limited on internet connectivity. You may not have cell phone coverage. Just the amenities and the conveniences that we take for granted in suburban and urban areas, they're just not there. And it's critical to provide support to schools and communities to fill in those gaps, especially for services that may not be readily available. In many places, those gaps are filled in by education service agencies and co-ops and BOCES and different agencies like that across the country that work with groups of schools and groups of districts to provide professional development, special education, and many of the other areas where schools just don't have the funding or the personnel to provide those services.
Johnny Lupinacci, jump in there, man.
Yeah, this is great. Thanks for joining us, John, tonight, and for all the work that you do, especially illuminating that important role. You know, one of the things we're always talking about here, Tim, and we kind of chop it up and go back and forth on this, is the importance of, you know, being transparent about how we do democracy and how educators are in the front lines of not only experiencing day-to-day the needs of a community, but being in an active role. Like they are in a political position, right? Like a lot of other folks in our communities, nurses, public service, all these kinds of ways. But to hear from a conduit, I love how you were talking about that, a conduit, because we talk about how distant decisions are often made, whether it be in DC, federal policy, or at our state capitals. And I love that you connected the dots here for us tonight for our listeners around how poverty increases with that distance, right? And that's a really important thing. I think also empowerment that goes hand in hand with that economic component, but just political empowerment also can be really, you know, lessened by distance. And so I think when we're paying attention to important political decisions, like the decisions for our schools or conditions for teachers and children, that hearing about that conduit is so important, because these are really, you know, the networks of what has to be healthy for democracy to work. Right. And so for our listeners to hear, right, everyday ways, we think of the elected folks in the big name positions. But we heard a few weeks ago from the Dirt Road Democrat. We hear from, you know, people at different levels of education all the time. And to hear you sharing that, that being in that position was an adventure, but, you know, a worthy form of service in the educational sector. This is huge for our listeners to hear, right? Listen, there are so many ways that as educators are, as members of an education community in this country, right, in our states, that we can lessen that gap. We can address issues of poverty, but with that, we can address those, the voice and empowerment that comes with that. So thank you for that work, man. I took a little bit of time because I really wanted to illuminate that for our listeners. And what I hope, Tim, is as we come back through this, I think also connecting the dots that we often do talk a lot about urban issues of poverty, and certainly they exist, right? But there are these unique similarities that our rural communities and our urban communities share that are just different enough to keep them in separate silos, but also that together, right, we can make a difference across both political parties to really making change for the better in our schools. So, John, if you can illuminate some of those connections for a lot of our urban listeners to build that connection to our rural community of listeners, that'd be huge, huge for this show tonight, just to connect some of those dots for us.
Absolutely. And as you were talking and you mentioned State of the Union tonight, you know, I'll be watching the State of the Union trying to think about, as Tim said, the diversity across rural America that isn't often seen and is often overlooked. Of course, there's white poverty in Appalachia, but poverty and rural schools and students looks different across the South and across the Southwest. There are black and brown students who need opportunities in those areas who face those same obstacles of poverty and lack of resources. So as I'm watching the State of the Union tonight and I'm thinking about policy and program, I'm also thinking about those students and what more we can do to help all of our students.
So, and thinking about, you know, again, back to the poverty issue, right? It's like, you know, if anything, it's like, it's the great uniter is that poverty, whether it's rural, whether it's urban, it is the same type of pain. But even across, though, the rural districts, even the diversity of is a diversity of types of issues of poverty, when you say about distance, whether it's about access to resources, all of these come into play. And, you know, talking about the economic issues here, John, we're about up on a break here. When we get back, though, I want to put this, you know, really the one of the bigger issues here facing particularly rural education.
Last spring, you chose hardworking seed, but did it work as hard as you did? At NK Seeds, we know that all the time, all the effort, comes down to this. All that matters now is yield and how the seed performed on your acre. Because you can't fake performance, and bushels don't lie. Visit nkseeds.com/harvest.
Hey, everybody. Glad you could join us. I'm Tim Hubbelt, better known as the Polka Guy, on the Sunshine Polka Party Variety Show.
Join Tim every Saturday and Sunday for a great variety of polkas, waltzes, and more. Wake up at 7 a.m. on Saturday morning to get the weekend started on the right foot, then enjoy a lively Sunday afternoon at 1 p.m. Same great show, two different times, one fun weekend. The Sunshine Polka Party Variety Show, 7 a.m. Saturdays and 1 p.m. Sundays, only on WFHR, locally grown radio.
Girls and boys in poverty around the world are dreaming of a better life and a brighter future. Children International and friends like you are giving these children a chance to achieve their dreams by ensuring that they have access to health care, education, life skills, and more so they can grow, thrive, and believe in themselves. Learn more about Children International and join us in our life-changing work at children.org today.
Hey, this is Jim Santel. I am the host of Morning Cannolis. Every single Saturday morning from 9 a.m. to 11 a.m., we talk about the major stories in law, in government, and the aspiration for justice in America. Delighted to have you join, call in, and be a part of our discussion right here on the networks of Civic Media.
From the hometown of NASCAR's Dick Trickle, locally grown radio, 97.5 FM and WFHR 1320 AM, your news talk and sports station.
Any way you want it, that's the way you need it. Any way you want it.
We do it every Tuesday night. Any way you want it, that's the way. You'll get it from us, Busted Pencils, educated educators talking education. Love that Rise Against version of a classic Journey song. I love it, Johnny. That's always, you know, the music here is something too. We always celebrate. It's the music. It's the talk. It's the information. We've got the former Deputy Assistant Secretary to the U.S. Department of Education for Rural Outreach, John White, is our guest, talking everything rural education. Had a nice broad opener to begin with. But John, you know, serious issues here. School choice vouchers, education scholarships, all the different ways we're talking about this. In rural America, though, how does one, talk to me about how, first of all, somebody in a rural America, how choice might not help them, or give us the situation, because it's kind of, for some people, they're like, well, all choice is great, but what's unique in rural America, rural schools, rural school choice? Give us a little bit of a primer there.
So let me begin by saying that we can't generalize when we say a rural school or a rural community, because rural could be, well, the federal government defines rural as rural fringe, distant, and remote. So fringe might be closer to a suburban area. There may be more population. There may be more options already there. When you start getting distant and remote, if there's one school, that's your option. There, if there's a single K-12 school, you have no other choice other than if online education is available, if there's broadband connectivity, and if there's, for example, an opportunity for an entrepreneur to start something new. But those are ifs. And in many rural communities, public school is your choice, is the choice. And it's a little disingenuous to say that choice is available to everyone, because it's not. Now, that said, there are many choices across the country, whether it's online, like you said, voucher, charter schools, and public schools. And the better we can make education for kids, that's what we should be aiming for.
But on the school choice thing, okay, vouchers, we're talking about this. So let's use the remote kind of situation, a school district. And I'll even, again, kind of talk to my specifics here, Southeast Appalachia, Ohio. You know, not really horribly like the Wyoming distance remote, but, you know, it's rural. And when I talked to the superintendents I met with yesterday, you know, when they look at choice, they're kind of like, okay, the other discussion that nobody seems to want to have is that people in these small rural areas in Southeast Ohio don't really want their tax dollars being offered up for choice, particularly when, as you point out, they don't really have a choice, maybe online education. But the other part is that, and I'll say, they like Friday night football and they like their school district. And that's kind of a situation. I mean, is this something, how do we make sense of that?
Well, I've been to the Appalachian Ohio region, and it's like many rural communities, the community life revolves around the school. Mm-hmm. And anything that takes away from that not only affects the school, but affects the community. So a lot of rural school leaders do bristle when you talk about taking funding and support away from schools that are anchors to the community. So there is a hesitancy there.
Mm-hmm. And then Johnny Lupinacci, so that was Southeast rural. Give me a sense of your rural issue and choice that you might put out there, vouchers.
Well, I think I want to echo what John's saying. It's so diverse across our rural communities, right? Mm-hmm. And so hearing that definition was a learning moment for me and really helpful as someone adjusting from primarily, you know, working in urban education to being a learner of what are the needs in our diverse rural communities. I think it's an ongoing process of really understanding the context of, you know, what our schools provide for the community and the relationship between schools and community. And I would really echo John here, like he highlighted your Ohio Appalachia kind of example. That's been my experience out here in the Northwest in the rural parts, is that schools, like most places in our country, and I'm a firm believer in this, play a strong role in the community and vice versa. And so that's again why when we're having these discussions, I think it's so important to historically put into context the role of public education in a democracy. And I'm pulling that apart away from Democrats, away from Republicans, because it's a shared responsibility of citizens of this country and even beyond the definition of what constitutes a citizen. But for all of us, really, you know, that relationship between our schools and the strength of our country and really that we are only as strong as our parts. Right. And so any community, whether that's rural or urban or the diverse kind of classifications of rural that John gave us here. Right. Because it's really different. Sometimes even, you know, 20, 30 minutes apart, both defined as rural schools, but radically different. And so how does school choice impact that? But also just how are we looking at our community strength, our public school system as providing a service, especially for rural spaces where we're often distant from some of the things that our urban centers provide, not only to children, but to families and community, right? So we're talking about the arts, we're talking about athletics, we're talking about job training, we're talking about access to internet to do things like job applications or filing taxes and different things that maybe we don't have access to, like a service or a vast network of library systems. Sometimes that can all be condensed in a public school. And I've learned the power of that in our rural communities out here. So I think I just want to echo it's really diverse. But those issues are complex and important to discuss.
Complex issues, echoes, diversity. We got it more. Our guest, John White. When we get back, one more segment, Busted Pencils, fully leaded, back after the break.
Boom.
If you're hanging out in Waukesha, it's 101.5.
Stop surfing the dial. You've found the greatest station ever. Locally grown radio 97.5 FM and WFHR 1320 AM.
The Locally grown 1320 AM and 97.5 FM WFHR programming is broadcast from the Bug Tussle Studios. Bug Tussle, keeping you connected to the world around you.
Hi, I'm Ryan Blaney, a third-generation race car driver, and we dedicate a lot of our time to going as fast as possible. My grandpa Lou is the reason why my dad and I started racing, and I'm really proud to follow in his tracks. But when my grandpa was diagnosed with Alzheimer's, it was a very unexpected bump in the road for us. I've learned a lot on this journey with my grandpa Lou, and the memories of my grandpa will always be with me. It's important to notice if older family members are acting differently, experiencing problems with their memory, or having trouble with routine tasks. Talking about Alzheimer's can be really tough. But if you notice something, have a conversation with your loved one. Encourage them to see a doctor or offer to go with them. Early detection of Alzheimer's can give your family time to explore support services, make a plan for the future, and access available treatments. The Alzheimer's Association provides care, support, and research to help you take control of the situation with your family and manage the disease together. If you or your family are noticing changes, it could be Alzheimer's. Talk about seeing a doctor together. Visit alz.org/time to talk. A message from the Alzheimer's Association and the Ad Council.
I'm John O'Hurley, and I support Paralyzed Veterans of America because our heroes have sacrificed so much for our independence.
I had just come home. I had noticed my legs were swelling. Next thing I know, it was 3 weeks later. I was paralyzed. PVA has brought me back to life.
While parachuting with my platoon, my parachute didn't open. It left me paralyzed. I just don't think my family would be as happy as they are without the support that I received from Paralyzed Veterans of America.
For more than 75 years, Paralyzed Veterans of America has kept a promise to never leave a fallen hero behind. That's why Paralyzed Veterans of America is providing specialized medical care, life-changing treatments, benefits our heroes earned, the jobs they want, and the accessible vehicles and homes they need. Our paralyzed veterans have helped us live the lives we enjoy today. It's our turn to give them the best lives possible. To learn more, go to pva.org today.
To protect his home and family from disaster, Steve used courage, wisdom, and his camera phone.
That should do it.
Way to go, Steve! By simply taking digital pictures of his family's important documents, Steve can always have them stored safely online, no matter when disaster strikes. Learn other simple ways to protect your home and family before a natural disaster at ready.gov. That's ready.gov. A message from FEMA and the Ad Council.
Hey, what's up, y'all? I'm Kelly Clarkson, and as the daughter of a school teacher, I know just how important education is. No matter how old you are or your situation, continuing to learn will enrich your life and help remove barriers you didn't even know were there. So much opportunity, y'all. Whether it's a foreign language, history, or a different way to look at things, take some time each day to learn something new. This message is courtesy of the United States Air Force.
Tired of low or no connectivity? Do you live in BTN, Bug Tussle Nowhere? We want to talk to you. Bug Tussle brings high-speed internet to the places others don't. No contracts, no data caps, truly unlimited internet. Call 877-227-0924.
Here's your forecast from locally grown radio, WFHR. Lows level off around 38 tonight under mainly clear skies, easterly winds 5 to 10 miles per hour. Sunshine mixed with clouds at times tomorrow, highs around 66, lows around 43, tomorrow night partly cloudy. Chance for scattered storms Thursday, chance for scattered rain showers on Friday. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki. Currently it's 77.
With a straight face.
Matt Flynn Direct. Weekday afternoons from 3 until 4 on the Civic Media Network and on the Civic Media app.
The memo says we gotta work to make the facts with the false charges. Pull up the eyes of the filthy masses.
But we are dancing on Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk. Educated educators talking education. The number 844-967-2789, John White, former Deputy Assistant Secretary, U.S. Department of Education for Rural Outreach. We are talking everything rural education tonight. The diversity within rural education, issues of poverty, dealing with school choice and how school choice might not necessarily be a big benefit, particularly in rural communities where there might not be much choice. And in fact, a lot of communities don't really. And I'll say this, I'm taking a leap, don't want the choice because their local public schools truly are the hearts of their communities. And so whether it's the kindergarten Halloween parade, whether it's Friday night football, whether it's the prom, whether it's the, you know, the holiday musical, these things are part of the culture in rural America. And when you talk about funding, which is what we're talking about in school choice, you're talking about taking funding from these local communities and sending them elsewhere. And that's when people see this starts to break down the community. Made me then think about, as we're coming into this segment, John, you know, we said we talked to Jess Piper, our dirt road Democrat from Missouri, who was a school teacher who got to the point where she said, you know, these issues, particularly, and she was in rural Missouri, these issues largely around choice, I got to run for office. I got to be a part of the political machine because I got to tell the story that, look, it's not this simple, that when we're voting for certain issues, it matters to really understand. So from an educator perspective, she was trying to say, I wanted to bring some light to the fact that some of the policies that tend to be supported sometimes in rural communities aren't for the benefit necessarily of people in the rural communities. John, as we think about this, how, you know, we're going to put this because Johnny's been challenging the listeners and educators out there to say, how do we get you involved to be like a dirt road Democrat like Jess Piper? How do you see this playing out in rural America, saying, you know, where's the biggest, say, political need to get people who are interested in education? How can they take an active role? What, is it running for office? Is it running for school board? Your thoughts on that?
Well, I guess the first thing I think of is boards of education are the governing body over school districts. They hire superintendents, they approve budgets and policies. So you really have a strong school board. Of course, you can have members of the community who have budget experience through business and entrepreneurs and et cetera. But it's really a benefit, I think, to have somebody who has taught, someone who has led a school or a district and has had that experience. And bringing that experience to a school board is just invaluable because you have, say you have seven people on a school board or even four or five on a school board. They're not all going to have that experience having worked in a district or having built a school budget. And so I think the more educators we can get to serve on school boards, the better informed decisions will be. And hopefully, the better the relationships can be between school boards, superintendents, and school districts.
Johnny Lupinacci, when are you going to be running for, you know, that rural district, man?
Oh, man, I'm still learning so much about about rural districts. You know, it's not in my future, although one of the things that came to my mind, John, hearing you make that recommendation and encouraging words that you have for folks to think about being part of that board is what if I've never become a teacher? Like, what about becoming a teacher? Like what do you have to say towards? I mean, I know our rural schools got to be like our urban schools, you know, feeling the crunch, teacher shortage, quote unquote, right? And so a lot of our listeners might not even be thinking about that as a political, you know, way to be involved. What are your thoughts about getting into being a rural teacher?
Well, first of all, teachers are often respected, regardless of what we see in the media, respected members of the community. And there are more and more ways to get into teaching now. And we need more and more people to consider careers in education, whether it be the traditional route, or whether it be through a teacher apprenticeship. The state of Tennessee received the first approval from the U.S. Department of Labor to develop a teacher apprenticeship. Now there are more than a dozen states doing it. There are other innovative ideas, like in Wyoming just last week, the University of Wyoming College of Education announced a pilot for a new competency-based education program that respects teachers' time and their needs by asking them what they need and providing those micro units not necessarily seat time and degrees, but those micro units to meet their needs on demand 24/7 as they need it. We're talking about a transformative approach to teacher preparation and professional development. So there are many great strategies and ideas emerging, and hopefully they can help us solve some of these shortage issues.
What do you think, yeah, John? Yeah, Johnny, go ahead. Keep going.
I mean, I love it, Tim. I mean, here we are talking week after week about this. And John, thanks for highlighting that, because for our listeners to hear that, you know, you may have a calling to education, right? And it doesn't mean you have to go away to college. You don't have to go necessarily back to traditional school. There is creative ways. And to our higher education listeners out there, right? We work with a lot of folks in teacher education. And so for folks out there to hear that this is a unique opportunity in our country to develop these creative partnerships, mm-hmm. like the University of Wyoming has done, like they've done in Tennessee, to really think about how to bring people with community experience and an affinity towards being an educator. Because there's a lot of us in different professions that find ourselves teaching quite a bit without the formal credentialing necessary to be in our schools. And so these are folks we want in our schools, right? And so I love hearing this. Thanks for sharing that as a key component, John. And I want to loop back around in this segment, Tim, if we can.
Sure.
Hearing, John, how our listeners or how folks who come back to this later and hear, you know what, there are some rural issues in my community that I would like to get out there. Tell us a little bit more about what you do and how our listeners can connect with you and be that political voice. They're doing the work, right? How they can be part of that larger process.
Sure. So I'd love to keep in touch. Now I'm a consultant. So I work with superintendents, school districts, colleges, education nonprofits across the country. And it's easy to find me. If you go to Twitter and you look for @RuralEd, you'll find me, and I'm always posting information and news. If you email me at john@jlwcommunications.net, that's john@jlwcommunications.net, I will respond and we can start a conversation.
Well, so on that conversation, John, I wanted to keep going on that. So because I'm looking at, you know, so on top of that, you were a public information officer, Prince George's County, director of communications, Howard County Public Schools, chief of staff, Maryland State Department of Education. So on, you know, on top of the Obama administration gig, you kind of hung out. You've been doing this education communications gig for quite some time. Johnny, thanks for asking John that question right there, because, you know, as we try to help people think about the possibilities of how they might want to get involved, it's always, okay, but what can I do next? And so I think this, you know, you're out there and you're saying, I can't run for office, I can't do this, but I want to communicate issues about specifics in my rural district, and I want to do a Twitter blast about that. John, is that, you know, is that something you help me with if I reach out to you to say, you know, help us understand how I come to your other job as a consultant and how you might craft a rural campaign for me?
Sure. So when I work with superintendents and school districts, we put together a strategic communications plan. I'll do a communications audit of how they communicate currently, what resources they have available, and we can see where the gaps are or where the strengths are that we can utilize. Same goes for colleges and education nonprofits. It's what I enjoy, and I like to help people across the country.
When you think about that part, though, too, even isn't that a huge issue, though, too? I'm talking about, I mean, if there's something defining in rural education, I'm going to be careful how I say this, but the lack and or miscommunications of what's really happening, you know, because I want to go back to, you know, our first topics where we talk about, you know, choice vouchers and things. It's like, you know, I hear the fact that you know, there's a policy that's advocating for all kids need the best choice for education in America. And I'm sitting there, and now we're going to go refer to my neighbor is that person saying, I think that sounds like a great policy, the best choice for the best education for all kids in America. And they hear that communication, and we know, and a lot of our listeners, though that's really rhetoric for school choice and taking local tax dollars and putting them into voucher plans. That, could you help a superintendent get that message out to their local community members when election issues such as school choice and vouchers come up?
Well, yes, but I think also it's just as important for the community to be able to express itself to the school superintendent and the school board, and the board to be able to sort of digest that and repeat it back in a way that says, this is what I heard, this is what we're actually doing, in case they didn't know that, and this is what we actually need as well. Because in most cases, parents want what's best for their students. And in many cases, people say, my school is doing great. It's all those other schools that have problems, you know.
Right.
And that's not always true. But I think the communication piece is always the most important piece to try and understand each other. And if we can increase that understanding, we can certainly get along better and make better informed decisions.
It's Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk. Our guest, former Deputy Assistant Secretary for the U.S. Department of Education for Rural Outreach in the Obama administration, John White. John, I got in the Twitter feed right here from Father Oblivion. Now yellow school buses drive past old brick schools that are inhabited by remodelers and folks short of cash. Small town schools are now the rural schools and starved of resources. So just wanted to, you know, recognize the people that are paying attention to the show in social media out there on Twitter talking about that issue. But John, I see you nodding your head there.
And one of the first campaigns I did as a consultant was with the Pennsylvania Small and Rural Schools Association, and they were launching a fair funding campaign, because at that time in Pennsylvania, there was no formula for the way tax dollars were distributed, and you could have a school on one side of the street doing great, a school in a less powerful legislative district not doing very well at all. And the small rural schools, you know, that any drop in funding could be a big deal in a small rural school, just like if you lose one teacher and that one teacher happens to be your math teacher, that could be a big loss.
Yeah, man, thinking about that issue, right? You just said the reliance on so many people, whether it's superintendents who need to drive buses on some Fridays when the bus drivers are sick. John White, thank you for busting pencils with us tonight. John White, former Deputy Assistant Secretary of the U.S. Department of Education under the Obama administration. Again, John, thank you for joining us tonight on Busted Pencils. When we get back, Johnny Lupinacci and Tim Slecker.
Over the Back Fence has moved. Tune in on Saturdays at 11 a.m. for an hour of water cooler talk, items you're looking to buy or sell, upcoming events in central Wisconsin, or just whatever. Join the conversation by calling 715-424-2600, and we'll go over the back fence at its new day and time, Saturdays at 11 a.m. It's the audio community bulletin board that comes to you. We'll see you there.
Smiles are powerful. They spread joy, laughter, and hope. But not everyone gets a fair chance at a smile. Every 3 minutes, a baby is born with a cleft, making it difficult to talk, hear, eat, and even breathe. In America, most children with clefts receive immediate care, but others around the world may never have access to the surgery they need to thrive. SmileTrain is changing that. As the world's largest cleft charity,
Our sustainable model has sponsored more than 1.5 million smiles. We offer training and financial support to local medical professionals so they can provide life-changing surgery and other essential services at no cost to families.
It's more than to see these children, to hear the difference that we make. And for me, being born with a cleft lip and palate, knowing what they went through is so life-changing for me.
Help us change the world one smile at a time. To learn more, visit smiletrain.org/learn.
Don't you wish your life came with a warning app?
Stop. That dog does not want to be petted.
A heads up before something bad happens.
You should not send that text.
Uh-oh. Life doesn't always give you time to change the outcome, but prediabetes does. With early diagnosis and a few healthy changes, you can reverse prediabetes and prevent or delay type 2 diabetes. To learn your risk, take the one-minute test today at doihaveprediabetes.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and its prediabetes awareness partners.
From the home of the Cranberry Blossom Festival, your news talk and sports station is locally grown radio, 97.5 FM and WFHR, 1320 AM.
It's 54 degrees.
Whether you're heading down Les Paul Parkway
or fighting traffic on the interstates,
this is The Shaw, 540 AM and 101.1 FM, WAUK.
You are wrong. What if you knew it all along? What if I figured out that I did not belong?
Really wrong if you decided to leave Busted Pencils right now. Fully led at Education Talk. Educated educators talking education. Our guest for the last three segments, former Assistant Secretary Education, Rural Outreach, John White. Thanks again, John White, talking everything rural education. Johnny Lupinacci, it's back in our hands here for the last little segment. Hey, also, if you're out there, you want to jump in and give us a call, your rural education stories, 844-967-2789, 844-967-2789. Always have time for a caller to share what it is that's on their mind. Okay, Johnny Lupinacci, we got a primer in rural education. We talked to the dirt road Democrat, Jess Piper. Now, we had a sense with David Donaldson growing your own. As we're talking about this now, too, back to the, what are you, you know, give me some senses of like, what are some of your takeaways now from the shows over the past month?
Well, Tam, you know, one of the important things John shared with us tonight, you know, it came across in all of these recent shows and really across the last couple of years of shows, but especially in the most recent ones, the importance of communication, the importance of having conversation, open conversations where where folks are sharing, but they're also listening actively, right? We're really talking about what can our schools be? What are they and what can they be? And seeing the great wealth of expertise in these really diverse spaces, whether it's rural or urban or the different categories of rural that our guests have shared, you know, they all really illuminated how important that communication is, how important it is that we talk to each other, and to bring it back up to the big picture, right? In a democracy, trust and communication are of utmost importance, right? Mm-hmm. And so when we talk about government, we talk about public service, and we have to put in the context of that public education, because schools are where we learn to work together, right? We learn a lot more than just the content. We learn the content, but we really learn to come together and be the community, be the country that we are. And so
you remember that? Yeah, you think about, you just jump into that poster, everything I needed to know, I learned in kindergarten.
Yeah, so let's keep that rolling, right? Kindergarten, first grade, second grade, third grade, all the way through, that these school spaces are really microcosms of our larger community and vice versa, right? So we really have that strong relationship, and that we communicate about the needs, about what's happening in our schools and what they can be, right? We know they play an important role. We don't always focus or prioritize that role. And so how do we recenter around those issues? That comes back to those prognostications, Tim. You're talking about this is the year you really see the so-called teacher shortage.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to say solved, because it's not that simple.
No, right.
Addressed in a really productive way, a really generative way. And we're hearing about how that's happening. The other major prognostication was that teachers actualize their political voice. Because I'll stand by this. No matter how much you identify as or not as a politician in your community, if you're a teacher out there, if you're working in schools, you're in a political position. And yeah, so I really say, like, these two things come together through communication, through sharing stories, through having conversations, to listening to not only each other, right, to educated educators talking in education, but to neighbors who care about education. And that ought to be all of our neighbors. And I think John highlighted that tonight too. He said, you know, really in his experience, and I have a very similar experience as John, is that no matter how folks identify, in general, most folks want what's best for the children in their community. And I would even extend that for children writ large. And so let's work towards our school being those spaces, to all our schools.
You know, I think about that, the way you put that, and there's so many different points here, but, you know, back to just the simplicity of recognizing when we say the function of schools, you know, and I think too many times, too many people really get trapped on that, just that academic part, right? And we talk about that. And Johnny, what we've been illustrating over the weeks here is that the foundational part of, as you said, whether it's communications in a democracy, but when we talk about schools, when we're talking about the importance of them in a community, it's because they are that first place where we learn about being a citizen in that local community and what it means then to participate in a democracy. So when you hear Johnny and me talking about this from a passionate standpoint, as, you know, quote, advocates of public education, as if we're some partisanship thing or coming at this, it's like, you got to understand what we're talking about here is really saying we want the preservation of the foundation of democracy, a public school setting, the public school center, where we can have these conversations with John White, Jess Piper, David Donaldson, future guests coming up, Dr. Diane Ravitch is going to be on the show. I mean, this is what we're dealing with here, whether it's rural schools that we were talking about today, whether it's urban schools, whether it's suburban schools. It's taking that idea of a school as an academic institution and broadening and recognizing that really it's the anchor of the civic life of a community, Johnny Lupinacci, the civic life. I'm going to give you the last minute there, man.
Yeah, man. I mean, I appreciate that, Tim, that bringing us back to civic life, right? Bringing us back to doing democracy. It's messy, but it's a project and it's a commitment worthy of all of our attention, especially as educators, right? And so I get really excited about the energy and the creativity and the collaboration that's possible, right? When we learn from one another. And there isn't a one size fits all here. There isn't a silver bullet in how to fix, you know, either the teacher shortage or addressing, you know, what's so-called been referred to as learning loss. But when we begin to talk about what matters in our communities and in our schools, these are complex issues, and they should be. And it's really important that we have conduits to come together and have those discussions and have them generative.
And that's what we do on Busted Pencils every Tuesday night. Oh, State of the Union coming up. Go check it out. But educated educators, thanks for listening. We always appreciate
Want more Busted Pencils? Follow us on Facebook and Twitter at Busted Pencils, or log on to BustedPencils.com for blogs, podcasts, and more. Join us again next Tuesday for Busted Pencils on Devil Radio 92.7.
Hey, this is Tim from Rise Against here on Busted Pencils Radio.
This is Matt Damon on Busted Pencils Radio. Please stop bothering me and just ask my mom already.
What grows in the forest? Trees? Sure. Know what else grows in the forest? our imagination, our sense of wonder, and our family bonds grow too. Because when we disconnect from this and connect with this, we reconnect with each other and build family memories we will carry with us forever. The forest is closer than you think. Find a forest near you and start exploring at discovertheforest.org. It's easy. Just put in your zip code to find family-friendly outdoor destinations near you. You'll also find guides to free activities, games, and amazing forest facts. Give the magic of the outdoors to your kids and reconnect with your family. Find a forest near you at discovertheforest.org. That's discovertheforest.org. Brought to you by the United States Forest Service and the Ad Council.
WFHR Wisconsin Rapids, 1320 AM and W248DE, broadcasting at 97.5 FM.
News Talk and